time certain item, please, Carla. Item number 519.
Adopt administrative rules for Chapter 2.16, Open and Accountable Elections Program.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, we're excited to have finalized these administrative rules, which clarify certain aspects of the Open and Accountable Elections Program. Typically, administrative rules do not have to go through council. However, this is a high-profile program with interest from many members on council and the public, so we wrote into the code that administrative rules would be presented to council. These rules have been open for public comment for about 30 days and were created in partnership with the Open and Accountable Elections Commission. Susan Mote, Program Director of Open Accountable Elections, will run through the highlights, and Amy Sample Ward, one of the Open and Accountable Election Commissioners, will also discuss the creation process in a lickety-split time. Really impressive.
Thank you. So with the first election cycle not having happened under this program, we took Seattle's approach when they were writing rules prior to their first election cycle of their program, which was to, rather than kind of imagining how the election cycle would play out and writing rules based on those assumptions, to actually try and write the bare minimum number of rules that we think are necessary for the first election cycle, see how it plays out, and then after that, tailor some very detailed rules to how the program is playing out in the city of Portland. The Open and Accountable Elections Code required the program to issue rules on the following topics: documentation for allowable contributions and certification, allowable and prohibited expenditures, contested elections, special elections, recounts, vacancies, withdrawals, certification, disbursement of funds, and return of unspent funds, obtaining contributions, the administration of the Open and Accountable Elections Fund, investigation and enforcement procedures, and inspection of documentation. The rules that it was decided aren't required, but would be desirable coming into this first election cycle for clarity's sake would be some clarity around reporting requirements, some leniency for late reporting if there are mitigating circumstances or personal emergencies, a rulemaking around accessibility and language access, and the emergency rulemaking authority, so that if something occurs that we didn't anticipate and we want to have the agility to create a rule to deal with it, we wouldn't need to go back for council approval for a year, so that in case some of you are in the middle of an election cycle, we can keep it off your plates while it looks political and potentially improper for you to vote on something, and then bring it to you after the election's over and let you guys deliberate on it when everyone feels it's proper for you to be deliberating on such things. So it went through a 30-day public comment period. It was circulated to all commission offices for comment. It went before the Open and Accountable Elections Coalition and the Open and Accountable Elections Commission for review, and a lot of the comments and feedback were integrated into this final document. And Amy Sample Ward, who's one of our Open and Accountable Election Commissioners, is here to discuss their review process.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thank you.
Morning.
So, as has already been said multiple times, I've never experienced that before. My name is Amy Sample Ward. Thank you for saying it so many times. I am one of 8, soon to be 9, commissioners for the Open Accountable Elections Commission. Excited to have a full team. And just briefly to Susan's point, so the full commission did review all of the rules first, then we created a rules subcommittee that met 3 times, 2 of those 3 times specifically to focus only on the rules section and get those hopefully true. Also, I think a lot of time in that meetings was spent to right-size the penalties, to ensure that programs had some integrity and fairness towards campaigns, knowing the true intent of this program and how we want these rules to support that. So after that, they came back to the full commission again at our most recent May meeting, and that meeting as a full group included discussion of language access, which does remain unresolved, but is being discussed with members of the city council, equity advocates, event hosts, etc. And we don't want that kind of ongoing conversation to hold up the adoption of these rules at this point, and as a commission voted unanimously at the May meeting to recommend them to adoption.
Thank you, Trevon.
You're welcome.
And colleagues, as you can gather from that brief presentation, there's a lot of detail in these rules, so we didn't propose to walk through every one of them. They were presented to the chiefs of staff, and happy to take any questions.
Yes.
Commissioner Daly?
Thank you, and thank you for your hard work on this. I want to express my concerns around, I guess, item number 17, which is accessibility and language access. I am a disability advocate. I'm the parent of a child with a disability, so I would be the last person to argue against accessibility accommodations, but I'm very concerned about the vagueness of this language. It is, participating candidates may not participate in a debate or similar public event that isn't in a location that provides equitable access to all members of the public. Accessibility includes reasonable provision of the following: language services, removing physical barriers, providing modifications, accommodations, alternative formats, auxiliary aids, and other services that ensure access upon request at least 10 business days prior to the event. Number one, candidates don't participate in organizing events. Number two, I'm concerned that this language is going to discourage small organizations and grassroots groups from holding forums. So it may decrease overall access to public forums for candidates, and only larger, more established organizations with the funds to provide all of these things will hold forums. I'm concerned about that. And finally, the language is so vague. You know, I've been working in this arena for over 15 years, and I'm not sure what providing modifications, accommodations, auxiliary aids, and other services might entail. So I imagine that someone that doesn't have direct experience with disability would be very confused by this language. So I'm not going to offer an amendment. I just wanted to go on record saying I think it's well-intentioned, but problematic. Mm-hmm. And finally, I want to say, if the city struggles to provide these things at their own public forums, then how can we expect small organizations to fulfill them? And that if we are going to require this, we need to give, we need to provide trainings, or we need to provide some kind of information. Maybe we need to provide a fund, because some of these services could run in the hundreds of dollars for a single event.
Commissioner, thank you. This is really great. You've explained what the Commission has been struggling with, and actually they have a proposal for doing exactly what you just suggested.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It arose from Commissioner Fisher's experience when he was running for re-election, when Philip Wolfe was also running, and Commissioner Fish decided he was not going to participate if Philip could not participate. And so that's the origin of this. As Susan and Amy both said, we agree that this needs more work. The language is recommended by the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Yes.
We're certainly happy to... Actually, we know there's at least one other thing that we're going to be coming back with, more open and accountable elections fund over the next couple of months. So this is one that definitely we would be happy to have more discussions
Fantastic.
About.
Fantastic. And it did just occur to me, there is a difference between accommodating a candidate with a disability and accommodating members of the public. If we have candidates who have mobility challenges, who are hearing, who are deaf, who are vision impaired, of course every forum should have to accommodate their participation. That, I have no problem with that. It's just that, you know, 20% of our population has some kind of disability. The smaller the organization, I think the harder it is for them to anticipate the needs and pay for them.
Right.
So, and well, and adequately address them is often my experience, but... Thanks. I'm glad to hear that it's a work in progress.
On it.
Okay.
May I ask a question, a follow-up to this question? Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for raising it, and thank you for Commissioner Fritz for acknowledging that there's people working tirelessly on this issue, and it is a complicated one. And so what is the time frame for bringing back a proposal to the council to address these issues?
We were hoping to actually get it ready for you to look at today, but it's just taking a little more time than that. We would expect it would be before you within the next month or two.
Okay, so but before people start participating in the program and have this nailed down.
Yes.
Okay, great. That's satisfactory for sure.
I feel like I should probably say that I do intend to use open and accountable, so I appreciate your sensitivity about not kind of creating potential
conflict
of interest. I'm very interested in this area. And would, you know, welcome that conversation.
That's actually what you said before, that's a good acknowledgement also, that the issue of the candidate, that might be something that would help us resolve this particular issue, is to specify that. Mm-hmm. I certainly remember fondly Sue Stahl running when you were, and I was, and certainly we would want to make sure that all candidates are able to participate.
And we were at forums that were really challenging for her to access, and to me that's inexcusable. You know, a candidate has a disability, you want to have a public forum for their race, you need to accommodate.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you.
And I'd like to be part of this discussion because my campaign last year, I learned a number of things. We were the only campaign last year that, for example, translated our website into a whole variety of languages to make it accessible to the public. That's not currently part of this requirement, but the idea was, if we're going to have a campaign website, we want to make sure that we're sending a clear message to the community that it is accessible. And so at some cost, we had the website translated, and there was enough. I don't remember how many different languages, but there were quite a few, so that we were communicating with people in multiple languages. I also, it was the first forum in the campaign, and it was a forum hosted by the Democratic Socialists of America, in which there was some significant miscommunication and a lot of sort of hard feelings that came out of it. There were a tremendous number of people from the deaf community were in the audience and felt like they were being disrespected. We had a candidate on the dais who but for the fact that he brought his own translator, that this would not have been a forum in which he could have fully participated. There was a big learning curve for me, and so what we said was, we won't participate in forums in which Philip is participating in and there aren't translation services and other things. I can tell you that it didn't, to my knowledge, cause any of the conveners to drop any of the forums. And we had forums, as you know, in these things. We had a lot of forums, and some of them were very sparsely attended. Mm-hmm. But what it did send a strong signal to people about was, let's make sure it's handicap accessible. So if you're in a wheelchair or you have any kind of mobility limitation, let's make sure you can get there. As appropriate, let's make sure there's translation services and other things. If people are requesting an accommodation, let's put people on notice that these are, you know, public forums and they have to make an effort. So it wasn't a perfect experience, but there was a lot of learning that went on. We ended up calling all the sponsors of events that were in the pipeline going forward and said, hey, I just want you to know we can't participate unless you do these minimal things. And I think to the credit of most of the sponsors, it was, again, a learning experience. It was, oh, gosh, hadn't thought about that. You know, we'll make reasonable efforts. I do think creating a fund to help subsidize some of these things is important. And the dates and the deadlines there may need to be some flexibility. What you don't want is someone gaming the system to prevent a publicly financed candidate from participating.
Yeah.
On the other hand, again, as I learned, if you don't take reasonable measures, then what you're really saying to someone who has filed that you're not going to be treated as fairly and seriously as other candidates, and that's unacceptable. And that was the gist of my concern, that we not have publicly financed candidates that are participating in forums where other people are prevented from fully participating and the law from being enforced. So I'd like to be part of these conversations as we work out the details and make it more specific. And I think it's going to take an election cycle to really debug this and do some learning. but I thank the sponsor for her willingness to take this on because I think it's really important.
I have a couple of, Commissioner Hurst, you please go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say, I was just trying to remember if we have a disability commission. Is that functioning?
It's currently not convening and is being having community conversations with the community about what the next iteration of that commission is going to be.
So I would...
We just funded in the budget the position that's going to help do that.
Thank you for that. It would be great to actually bring Philip Wolf and other people who are disabled together, maybe for a focus group to really talk to them directly about how we could make sure that we are writing rules that will ensure that they can fully participate, whether they're candidates or whether... they are people that want to work on an election that's actually being run by someone with a disability. We always do this after the fact, and it would be so much more effective if we would bring people with us, right, as we go through this process. But I agree with Commissioner Fish that until we go through a full cycle, and learn what we don't know about what we don't know, then I think as long as we're engaging those communities and keeping them connected to make sure that if we identify barriers that we remove them as soon as possible, yeah. I think we will have a excellent election cycle. So thank you for your hard work. It's amazing how much progress we've made in such a very short period of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner
I could
Fish.
Just add one other comment that I now recall. The language is shall not participate in a forum. Mm-hmm. Is that the specific trigger language?
Yes.
Okay, because there was a second category of controversy in my race, which I'll just put on the table so that you're aware of it. And that is, notwithstanding the commitment I made that if I were on a panel, I would not participate unless it was fully accessible, I did one Saturday attend a forum. Actually, it was Joanne's forum because I was interested in seeing how those candidates were doing. So I went to a church forum. Joanne and the other candidates for the other seat were participating in a debate. Philip came to that and similarly felt shut out from the process and was very critical of me for participating. And, you know, we drew a distinction between being a participant and you know, for our race and being in the audience at some other debate. But it still raises an interesting question. And I understand from his perspective why they were, and he didn't view them as either or. He viewed them as the same set of issues. So I offer that just to complicate our thinking a little bit, because that became a topic of conversation.
Yes, thank you.
I have a question, and I know you're prepped for this, and I don't think I got the answer prior to the session this morning, but it's my understanding based on the rules that if one were to have funds in their PAC, which I do, if I were to participate in this program, I would have to return those funds. Is that accurate or no?
So if they're in your candidate political committee, you would need to return them after filing your notice of intent and pay a penalty for having collected them outside of the context of the rules, but then could get certified if you met the certification requirements.
Okay, so could I stop you on that point?
Yes.
So how can you tell? I have a PAC. It's been ongoing. My PAC's been alive for, I think, 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
The funds get used for a variety of purposes. They get used for sponsorships, mm-hmm. Tables. They get used for other initiatives. Most recently, for example, I made a contribution to the regional housing bond, mm-hmm. And they could also be used for the purposes of re-election. How do you make that differentiation?
Are we talking about a candidate's political committee or a PAC separate from the candidate's political committee?
It is the candidates, yeah.
Okay. So we require, once a person has filed their notice of intent, at the next reporting deadline, they need to report all of their activity in that political committee, from the beginning of the election cycle. And if there are funds in that political committee already, they can transfer up to $5,000 of those funds as seed money into the account they're going to use for the public money to, come into and to make all of their expenditures out of. So what they need to do is essentially freeze the old account so that they can't use it to support their election while they're a participating candidate.
So as long as it's sequestered, if it is sequestered separately, it could still be used for those other purposes. It just could not be used for the furtherance of a local race. Is that a fair way of stating it?
Since the election.
Just so I understand it.
If it's an account separate from the candidate's political committee,
right. So what if you create an entirely new PAC just for the purpose of participating in the public election cycle?
Mm-hmm. There are two rules that this relates to. So one set of rules, if it's your candidate committee, then you basically have to freeze any of the money that was raised prior to the election cycle, and then have a separate account that you're spending, bringing money into for as a participating candidate and spending money out of. If it's a separate political entity that's not the candidate's political committee, then it can continue to do its business as long as it doesn't make any actions that supports your candidacy or opposes one of your opponents.
Okay, and who would make that determination? Let me give you just a crazy example. Mm-hmm. Let's say we had a 6th congressional district in the state of Oregon, and it was important, Portland, and we had a congressional candidate with $750,000 in their PAC, mm-hmm. and they decide, hey, I'd really like to run for the city council, I'd like to run for mayor, or whatever. Walk me through that. Does that mean that they could not use the $750,000 in their PAC for any political purpose while they are running, and they would establish a separate PAC for the purposes of the election? Is that a correct interpretation?
Well, so one of the scenarios we were thinking through with the rules was, what if someone thinks they're running for one race at a different level that doesn't have a public financing program, and so they're raising money and spending money according to the state rules, not the program rules. And then something happens, a seat opens up, for example, and they think, actually, I'd like to run for that seat at the city level. In that case, all they have to do is, if they want to use that account that they'd already been raising money into and spending money out of, but not according to program rules, they just need to remedy any rule they've broken, pay, return contributions that were in excess of the limits, or cure any prohibited expenditures, pay a penalty, and then apply for certification. So that's how it would work in that scenario.
Okay, so, and just to make sure I understand this then, as long as there is a sequestered independent PAC related to the race at the municipal level, and the other resources are definitively not spent for the furtherance of that campaign, you could still participate using that new PAC and only that new PAC. Is that correct?
So the other rule is that you can't...
We can't get you to say yes or no.
Sure, I know. So the other rule is that you can't solicit or direct contributions to an entity,
right,
other than your campaign committee,
okay,
that spends money on your race. So if you have already done so and it's already spent some money on your race, then you pay a penalty according to the rules.
Okay. And one final question related to this, and we don't necessarily have to nail these answers down today, mm-hmm. but I'm just giving you some of my concerns that I think we're going to have some very clear, definitive rules around. Who gets to decide? Let's say that you're right and that I've established a separate PAC and we have funds going in from the public elections process, and somebody says, but hey, wait a minute, you are through your other PAC supporting a fundraising effort or a dinner for a key constituency, mm-hmm. Let's say Planned Parenthood or NARAL, Pro-Choice Oregon, mm-hmm. that could have an impact on this race.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a contribution to the race or isn't, and who gets to decide? Who's the definitive decider?
So the director of the Open Accountable Elections makes the initial determination and sends a letter, you know, announcing a penalty or sometimes decertification. Then the candidate can then, at request, reconsideration if they believe that that determination was made in error. And if that's not resolved to their satisfaction, they can do a formal appeal. And we're working with the state administrative law judges to handle the formal appeals process.
Okay, good. And then last but not least, and I may have just misinterpreted this in the proposed rules, it appears that the administrator has the authority to change the rules unilaterally for a period of up to 1 year. Is that accurate?
That's right. That's emergency rulemaking.
And what kind of rules are subjected to, what's the latitude there? What is the span of control over those kinds of unilaterally made rules?
The same rulemaking authority as the law provides.
Which is what?
Which is, it's essentially this list, the list that I kind of listed out earlier, and then any other rules necessary for the administration of the program.
And that's similar to other administrative rules that the director of a bureau gets to make changes. As I said at the beginning, normally these rules wouldn't even come to council, but we wanted them to.
Okay. I'll stew on that for a while.
Okay.
But I appreciate your responses. Thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I have to say it. I was totally with you until you tried to answer the mayor's questions.
Okay.
And then I got more confused than I've been about this process.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never heard you say yes or no.
Okay.
To the mayor's question about if I've got this campaign fund that's separate from my city campaign fund, can I still use that campaign fund for all the legal purposes that I would be able to use that campaign fund for, as long as it's not impacting the race that I'm running for with the city public finance system?
That's a yes.
Thank you. I've been waiting for that, right? Okay, so those two can be totally separate and operate separately as long as I'm not co-mingling those funds.
Commingling or using one to support another.
For
yes.
A mm-hmm. dubious purpose, like getting elected to the council, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I feel much better now. Thank you.
Very good. Any further discussion? Very well. Is there any public testimony on this item, Carla?
Yes, we have three people signed up.
Very good.
Come on up. Lightning, Charles Bridgecrane Johnson, and Maggie.
Thank you, everyone, for signing up today. 3 minutes each, please. Name for the record. No.
Oh, boy. Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Superhumanity. Now, so it's my understanding is that one of the reasons this program is being put together is to take in $500 from a candidate, and then the city will match those funds. Now, if I'm incorrect on that, you're going to have to explain that, because what I'm seeing here is that the city is wanting to subsidize this, the candidate, and then put a lot of restrictions on what they're going to be able to do as far as running as a candidate. And where I find this rather interesting is that you have a penalty system in place to come back. If you don't report properly, you'll be penalized. We can go up to $10,000 in penalties. We'll do a 12% interest rate. We'll contact the city attorney. We may seek civil penalties. We may not. And then on the rules itself, you say, well, we can pass an amendment to change the rules, and those rules are good for 12 months. There'll be no city council approval, but if you want to make those rules permanent after 12 months, then we'll put it up in front of the city council. And then you counter back and you say, well, this isn't going to be political if we run a lot of penalties on this candidate, and they're giving us maybe information that's late. And there's a lot of issues here that just opens up a situation to where, let's just say I wanted to run against the mayor. And I have city council members that don't like me because of the way I've spoke out against them in the past.
And then I sign up for this program, and then you have some director, and they go, oh, that's Lightning. Oh, boy. Look at this. A little bit late here, this, that. Oh, well, he's got this separate fund over here. Well, we'll let it slide over here, but oh, Lightning. This is our time, Lightning. This is our time to let you know how government really works. And, you know, here's my problem. You're trying to be open and accountable here, but I think this is purely political on jeopardizing a candidate's position to be able to move forward. And such as what the mayor said, he's already has funds over here. Now he's supposed to possibly freeze these funds in some manner, then report these funds over here, and then come back here and then get approval. Oh, well, you're in violation, more penalties. Well, I'd like to have access to every document and every penalty on any candidate, because everything that comes up, I want the media to have everything. Are you going to allow me to do that, to hand everything to the media?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Everything will be posted online and everybody will be able to see it.
Okay, and this is my option if I'm a candidate to go into this program, correct? So wouldn't that influence maybe a vote, because this person doesn't want to go into this program, but it looks open and accountable, we'll be viewing this. This person does not. Wouldn't that kind of influence that vote at the end of the day by the public, possibly? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Just to correct your initial statements,
yes.
The rule is that you can only accept $250 from any Portland resident.
Okay.
And then only the first $50 is matched.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Maggie, would you like to?
Hi, I'm Maggie. I don't want to run for office, but I want to comment on the PAC-related issue first. It's too bad that we've got this PAC situation where you just run for election all term instead of having just here's your public money to run for 6 weeks and that's it, you're done, and the rest of the time you're running the government instead of running for office. You see what I'm saying? Rather have you fixing and government problems than just running for office. That's not a job. And then the second thing I would like to say on voting access and disability, voting access and new citizens, voting access and, formerly incarcerated, voting access for low-income marginalized citizens. I want to comment about voting access. I worked on Obama's 2012 campaign. I covered the university and I covered the low-income and disabled people. And I want to tell you that they feel very marginalized, especially disabled people. I would go to the low-income apartments and, I would explain to them that I couldn't tell them how to vote, but I could tell them who the people were and who, which district they were in, and that was it. And at the end of the campaign, I had, so many envelopes, running back, when the clock was running down, that I had to stuff some envelopes into my shirt because I had no more room to carry any back to the district. And whether they were voting Republican or Democrat, I consider it a triumph when a low-income disabled person votes. And you can go back in my history and look, I bring blind people and deaf people up to the governor's office and help them write notes to the governor. And I just think we need better campaign literature, because the newspaper campaign literature is really bad. We need Reader's Digest, big print, color photos, show which district each person is in, what time their drop-in is, when they're available, all that, email. And then we need, what disabled people love? They love it when the campaign people come with the boxes and they come to the apartments and they don't have to go to the polling booth. They love them to come and pick up the envelopes and take them right back to the precinct district and drop them right off. So the students can do that.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty.
Maggie,
yeah.
I just want to say, there's some things that government shouldn't do. And mm-hmm. what you're talking about is one of those things that I do not believe government should do. That is the job of community nonprofits. I've done mm-hmm. a lot of voter registration and education campaigns, mm-hmm. and we really don't want government going out organizing meetings to explain to people how to vote, right?
Right. That's why I was doing it, because I'm out in government. And I said at the beginning, I don't want to run for office.
But let me just say, the League of Women Voters does one of the best jobs of really explaining both sides of ballot mm-hmm. measures. It is in plain English. They do an excellent job of that, right?
Yeah, and I've got to say, the League of Women Voters, they're getting up there in age, and they don't like to go out to the universities and disable people because they,
however,
you know,
comma, yeah, it is available in every library. It is accessible in every corner of the city of Portland, right? So let's utilize community resources that we have
newspapers
rather
and
than
libraries,
trying
I agree.
To duplicate efforts that work so well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it'd be great to have ballot boxes at the library, you know. That's right. There is here. That's right.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Maggie, I just want to say thank you for your testimony and thank you for the work that you've done. It's obvious that you shared the passion on this issue.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, and I'll just say I know many of the women who are involved with the League of Women Voters, and most of them are going to outlast me for sure. Good morning. How are you doing today?
Or perhaps at least outlast your mayoral regime. I'm Charles Bridgecrane Johnson, and I'd like to put a little context. You know, back in 2012, 38,762 voters thought that Cameron Witten would be the best state treasurer. But alas, Ted crushed him with almost 1 million votes. And now we have a city council where I would say that the most elected person, even though only three people are currently in the five chairs, the most elected person is Joanne Hardesty, who had over 150,000 votes, almost 40,000 votes ahead of the actual mayor. And as we move towards the 2020 election, it's great that we're going to this open and accountable election system, so more grassroots people that are, you know, not as engaged with the local democratic machinery will be able to run. But as we learned from the mayor's questions, you know, we have things in this ordinance like Part 15 Q3 Roman numeral 4, where fortunately those things only all fit in 13 pages, but there's a maximum penalty of $10,000, and I think that that's the thing that actually most ties in with the concern that Lightning raised, is how do we make sure that one candidate, when they make it have a problem, is not penalized more than another. It's going to be a learning process, and I'm definitely in favor of seeing you all vote unanimously as a unanimous panel of five to put this into practice. But the phrase political action committee isn't in there, only the phrase political committee. So, you know, hopefully what Lightning alluded to in his question that Amanda Fritz answered is people's conduct within the system is an issue that we get to judge them by. If a person says, oh, I don't know if I want to use the highly regulated public process system, I just want to grab bootloads of cash from Monsanto or Nike and run.
Or Trump's ambassador to the EU.
Okay, yeah, please. Yeah. Let's Sentinel Hotel, Gordon Eastland, Trump's EU ambassador. Yeah. So, please do vote yes and make sure that we develop a context so that maybe there's eventually some language linking the amount of the penalty to the size of the indiscretion. I couldn't see in the brief time we were looking at this how that's in there, but it's an important program as we look at Commissioner Fritz moving on and as our community tries to decide which people are going to be vying for the mayoral seat and how we're all going to pressure Joanne to run for that seat. We need to have these processes so that great people that have already been mentioned, the late, great Sue Stahl, who is no longer with us, can inform these conversations, and Philip Wolf. And I also hope that we make some progress to wrap it up, resurrect please. Something like the PCOD, the Portland Commission on Disability. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, both of you. Commissioner Fritz?
I just want to say we need more students.
No, Maggie, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Commissioner Fritz?
Would you be comfortable putting an emergency clause on this? Would anybody not be comfortable putting an emergency clause on this?
Then I
move
that motion.
I move to add an emergency clause because it's in the public interest to have these rules in effect when the program opens on July 1st.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion on this particular amendment? Please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment passes. To the main motion,
we just put an emergency clause.
Yep, this is a resolution to the main motion. As amended, please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That is not right. I withdraw that. This is an ordinance.
Yes.
And we've now put in an emergency clause.
Right.
Right. Okay. Sorry. Coffee hadn't kicked in yet.
Aye again.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Colleagues, thank you for delving into these rules, for the engagement in the system. Thank you very much to Susan Mote, Anna Paisior, Christina Nieves, and Tim Crayle. Thank you to the Open and Accountable Elections Commission. You've done amazing work in a very, very short time. Thank you to the Voice for All Portlanders Coalition, who've been engaged in this process since the very beginning. And thank you just to the people of Portland for electing me in the first place with public campaign financing, and for knowing that this is wise use of taxpayers' money because it's going to increase the trust in government and the avoiding the appearance of corruption for politicians. It's a small step, but a necessary one. Aye.
Wheeler.
First of all, sorry for the confusion. People may not realize that sometimes sitting in this chair requires an incredible amount of multitasking, and I sort of blew it there, so sorry for the confusion. I think this is an important step in the right direction. I want to be very clear. I think there will need to be revisions over time. I think there'll be a learning process, and this is a process that's going to evolve. But I want to thank Commissioner Fritz in particular for the considerable amount of effort that she and her team have put into this. And I'm glad that we now have the commission ready to step up their work. That gives more public eyes on the process. And I look forward to seeing how this evolves in the months and years ahead. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. As